Gather round, take a seat, relax. It's the Verbringen with Rabbi Levi Avtzon, right here on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtzon from Linksfield Shul. It's a privilege and an honor to be here with you on this day. Here we are on the second day of Av, the sixth day of August. I wish you well. We stand in an interesting time, a time of tension. And yet, I want to start off with a message that my friend, Rabbi Lema Barber, a rabbi in Mauritius, shared a few minutes ago and really resonated. Just finding it. Here we go. In today's Torah portion, it's customary during the week to read each day one of the seven aliyot of the upcoming parsha, right? The seven portions per Torah portion. So today is portion number three. And Moshe, in this portion, recounts the stories of the spies returning with a negative report and then proceeds to tell them, do not be demoralized and do not be afraid of them. Hashem, your God who leads you, he will do battle for you. And these words said over 3,300 years ago surely reverberate today. Let's not be afraid or demoralized, and with Hashem's help, the land of Israel will come out stronger than ever. And that's my first message. My first message of the day is the biggest win of any enemy is when they demoralize us. The physical damage is obviously devastating, and please God, none of it will happen. And right, a lot of people could do a lot of things to us, but the biggest hurt they can do is when they take out our spirit, when they make us afraid, when we become demoralized. And in that way, often the enemy wins, because even without doing anything, they're getting us afraid. And that's a win. And we have to see it that way. We have to see that our fear is a victory to evil. FDR, the President of the United States during World War II, when he was elected in the early 30s, he said, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. He was using it for a different context, but there's no question that that statement rings true. The only thing we have to be afraid is fear itself. We love fear. And I'm not a psychologist, but I would argue that one of the reasons we love fear is because somehow if I'm afraid, that means I'm aware and it makes me feel like I'm somewhat in control. I know what's happening. I'm very aware of it. I'm preparing for it. I'm mindful for it. It's a terrible, terrible attitude in life. Fear is a terrible word and a terrible emotion. Yes, it has utility like anything else, but most of the time when we bring fear, it helps us very little, if anything at all. And it's customary, you'll see it in every Siddur, pretty much after each prayer, there's a paragraph that says, it quotes from the prophets, Al Tira, do not fear. Shachris, after Mincha, after Maariv, three times a day, after the prayer of Aleinu, we have the paragraph, Al Tira, do not fear. And multiple times in the book of Tehillim, we have this idea, Lo tira, do not fear. Le'sira mipachad loila, don't be afraid of the night. Al tira ki ashirish, don't be afraid when the wealthy man gets too strong. Don't be afraid. This fundamental idea of being afraid is so dangerous. And we all know that you could only achieve greatness in this life. And greatness doesn't mean being super accomplished. It means becoming a better version of yourself when we're fearless. And not necessarily 100% fearless, just fearless, a little less fear. And now I believe that it's a message that needs to deeply resonate with us, especially when the 9 days, and a lot of people, there's traditions that the 9 days are, you know, they have not such a great energy, and we're not supposed to travel for leisure during this time. And yes, there's various customs that we do during this time, an act of mourning, but I would still encourage us not to live in fear, especially none of these times. Because fear is a win. It's a win to disable us, to disable, literally, what I mean disable, to literally make us less motivated, less inspired, less uplifted, less go-getter. It sucks our energy out. And we can't afford it, especially in our time after 10 months in war. And after quite a few years of instability and, you know, a bit of craziness all around us. Fear is the worst thing we could bring into us because it already takes a volatile situation outside of us and brings the volatility inside of us. When the world's crazy outside, we have to be stronger and more stable inside. One way to think of it is, you know, if everyone around me is solid and I'm a bit, you know, fluid and like I'm not really holding it together, I'll still be okay because I'll be held up by people around me. But if everyone around me is falling apart and I'm falling apart as well, then ach and ve, that does not bode well. We're living in a time that so many people are, you know, buckling, like so many people are overcome by this incredible fear. And the answer is not joining it. It's not about joining the race. Who could be more afraid? Who could be more pessimistic? It almost feels like often we find ourselves when we say chatting around the coffee table or a dinner table, it becomes the pessimism Olympics. But who could be more negative? Who could predict, you know, more doom, whether what's going on in the Middle East, whether what's going on in our own country, whether what's going on in the Jewish community, who could be the most negative? Ah, you win. Really? The unity government's not even going to last a year? Oh, really? Wow, you're really good. You're so cynical. You win the cynicism Olympics. You get an award. And hope is for silly people, right? Faith is for naive people. And I would argue, no, faith is for smart people. If we live in this world without hope, then there's no point of living. Hope has been the incredible anchor that has kept our nation, that has kept humanity alive. This deep belief that it will be okay. And then when it's not okay, it will be okay after that. But this deep belief that it's not all heading down, that miracles can happen, that Hashem watches over us, that God watches over us, that it's not just predictions and estimates and numbers and statistics. We defy that. There's no statistic. If even the smartest person 2,000 years ago, if they just looked at the odds, and I would ask them at the destruction of the Second Temple, for example, or destruction of the Holocaust, or any other pivotal destructive moment in Jewish history, I would ask them, what are the chances that in 2024, Jews would still be flourishing, Judaism would be flourishing? The chances would be zero. Because yes, it's good to be aware of where things are going and trends and all that stuff. But fundamentally, we have to realize this world doesn't only follow statistics and predictions and, you know, politics. There's things that transcend it. There are miracles in our times. There are things that are incredible. And the only challenge is for us to see it. The only challenge is for us to believe it. The only challenge is for us to know that things are not 100% in our control, because that's what happens when we think that this world's totally in our control. When we think that only human beings run this world, then when you see human beings failing at living up to their higher selves, then you kind of give up. But when you realize, yes, we're partners and we have a role to play, but ultimately this is God's world. And God has a plan and God's taking us somewhere. And we have to partner with him and we have to do our best part, but it's not all us. You could breathe then. Hashem yilachem lachem, God will fight for you. And you just do your thing. And what's our thing that we have to do, I really believe at our time, is to show more love to each other. Yesterday was the Yahrzeit. It's the only Yahrzeit mentioned in the entire Torah. If you open the entire five books of the Torah, you will not find a single date of death for any of the great people other than one person, Aaron. Aaron the high priest, the older brother of Moshe. His Yahrzeit was yesterday. first day of the month of Av. The one man who believed in peace above all else, his yahrzeit's in the Torah. And now that we're still, you know, the day after his yahrzeit, I really believe that in this month of Av, especially as we mourn the destruction, we also have to realize that the only answer is when we learn to get along. And I'm not only talking about in the macro in Israel, the communities have to get along. I'm talking about me and my brother-in-law, right? And me and my sibling, and me and my parent, our own little universes, to bring healing, to bring forgiveness.
This is the Fabringen with Rabbi Levi Avtson on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtson. You were just listening to Wall of Stone, which is a song we often play definitely during the 3 weeks of mourning. It's a song that basically describes what it must feel like to be the Western Wall while people are coming and praying and asking for the temple to be rebuilt. At the same time, maybe forgetting that what brought the destruction is still waiting to be fixed, and that is be bigger and to forgive and to get along and not to fight and to be better versions of ourselves. And really, what I'm sharing today boils back to a very fundamental story. It's a story that literally, it was a small moment in history, but defines a movement and it defines a transformation of the Jewish people. Let me explain what I mean. In the late 1600s, the late 1600s, just before 1700, there was a baby born in Ukraine. And his name was Yisrael. And Yisrael was born to very elderly parents. His father's name was Eliezer. His mother's name was Sarah. And his mother died, I believe, at childbirth or very young. And his father died when he was 5. And just before his father passed away, he turned to his son and said, Yisraelical, my dear Yisrael, I want to leave you with two messages. Obviously, he was a very wise child, but he was still a young little kid. Two messages. Fear nobody other than Hashem. And love every Jew with all your heart. So fear nobody other than God and love with all your heart. Two simple ideas, which served as the kernel of a movement that transformed Judaism, because this young Yisrael eventually grew up to become the famous Baal Shem Tov. If you haven't heard of him, I encourage you to Google and read about Baal Shem Tov, who literally transformed the Jewish world in the 1700s, developed the Hasidic movement, was the Rebbe of great individuals, and eventually some of the greatest names in Jewish life in the last 250 years were either his students or the students of his students. People like Rabbi Elimelech of Lizhensk and Rabbi Levi Yitzchak of Berditchev and Rabbi Nachman of Breslev and Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Liadi, the author of the Tanya, and many of these were either his students or the students of his students, Magid of Mizrich. And all of them, in their own way, were building on these basic ideas, which weren't original, but, you know, everyone knew, don't be afraid, but putting them as the focus, almost like pushing them to the top of the pile of values. That two core values for the Baal Shem Tov were fear nobody other than God. And that value, by definition, in order to live up to that value, you have to understand a little more about God, and you have to understand a little more about the world. In other words, while the world is nothing other than God, and to love with all your heart, you have to understand who you are, what other people are, how you're all interconnected. So those two ideas served as the foundation of an incredible transformation of Jewish life. And today, I would say, whether in the Hasidic movement or beyond the Hasidic movement, those ideas have really been pushed and to the top of people's value system across the Jewish world today. And I don't think anyone today would say they're specifically Hasidic values. their universal Jewish values, their universal decent values, and that is to live with no fear other than from God. And that's not even a fear of punishment. It's an awe. And to love with all your heart. And those are really the two themes that we're exploring today, because those are two themes that really come across, especially in our time. We started off with the idea of don't be afraid, because many of us are like, okay, Haniyeh was killed, and that dude in Lebanon, and what's going to happen, and is Iran going to retaliate, and how they're going to retaliate, and people are panicking and flying out of the country, and like, stop the fear. Stop the fear. That is the biggest win to them, and it's not a way to live. God runs this world. Right? In the famous chapter 23 of Tehillim, Gam ki elech begeitz al mavet lo yirara ki ata imadi, even if I walk in the valley or shadow of death, I do not fear because you're with me. This basic principle that I don't fear. And that now remember, that statement is not saying when I'm having a nice walk on the beach, I don't afraid, right? I'm not afraid of sharks eating me while I'm on the beach. That's not what the statement is. It's when I'm walking begeitz al mavet, literally in the darkest parts of my reality, I'm not afraid. Or as the Talmud says, afilu cherev chadeh menachas al tzavari shel adam, even when there's a sharp knife on somebody's neck, al yisyash min arachamim, he should not give up, and he should not, you know, he should never despair from God's compassion. In other words, God could still create a miracle. This basic idea that no matter what, even when everything is breaking apart, and even when we are begeitz al mavet or cherev chadeh, when we're literally in the darkest moments of our life with a sharp knife around the neck, we don't give in to fear. How much more so when nothing has happened yet, when there is no knife around the neck, or rather it's only about what's going to happen. There's no room for fear. Zero. Justification? Yeah, there's always justification to be afraid. Oh, who knows what could happen? But I'll be honest, if a person lives with fear, then life itself is pointless. Why would you bring a child into this world? It's so scary, right? What's going to happen to them? Like, once you go down the rabbit hole of how things could go bad, you literally become, you freeze, you become a mannequin. You can't make decisions. You become indecisive. You freeze and fright because you're like, but you can't live like that. The only way to live is with this deep faith that someone's in control, and I don't know what's going to happen, but even if it's not great in my perception, it will be okay because Hashem is walking with me, Hashem's carrying me, He knows what's going on. If I'm living with faith, and every single time things, the stock market yesterday didn't do well, Bitcoin, oh, panic. Panic. The government, panic. Load shedding, panic. Potholes, panic. There's always a reason to panic. There's always a reason to be afraid. No kidding. The future, nobody knows. And we could be certain about this. There'll be things in the... please come, Mashiach comes right now. But as long as we have to wait for Mashiach, if we have to wait, you can be certain of two things. There'll be beautiful moments and there'll be terrible moments. You have no idea what the beautiful moments will look like, and you have no idea what the terrible, right? None of us predicted that terrible would look like COVID or October 7th. Most of the stuff that we thought would happen for the bad didn't happen. And most of the stuff that we dreamed of happening good didn't necessarily happen, or some did, some didn't. The point is, life is living with a certainty that there is no certainty. And still, it's okay. Like, I really feel that our living in fear is destroying people's lives. I believe that it's one of the major, not the cause, but one of the major causes to the mental health crisis we're living in. It's one of the major causes of people's deep anxiety and deep stress and the collapse of relationships and people not coping with life is this deep fear. And this fear comes from an assumption. And the assumption is that life is only worth living when it's good. Well, flash alert, Avtsin discovered something, which we all know, and that is life is worth living even when it's terrible. Life is inherently valuable. And we go down a very dangerous rabbit hole when we start saying which life has value and which life doesn't have value. every life is valuable. But when we tell people that the only life that's beautiful is you have a beautiful relationship and you're doing financially well and you're physically fit and you're popular and you're in the cool group, then you have a great life. But if you don't have any of that stuff, shame. What a failure of a life. That leads to very dangerous places. I'll give you a radical example. It's radical. In other words, I'm not saying anyone's remotely like that, but it's just to bring the point. The 1930s, before the Nazis were even persecuting Jews majorly, they were persecuting disabled people. Mentally ill, physically ill, disabled. Why? Because they came to a decision in order to, you know, evolution of the species. We have to cut off all those sick branches. They were doing euthanasia to sick babies and mentally ill people, building concentration camps for them, annihilating them. I remember reading a description of this Nazi doctor sometime in the 30s that he had just killed his 10,000th patient, and they had a little party in the clinic. And someone asked the doctor and said, "Aren't you a bit disturbed by what you just did? Like, don't you feel a little guilty?" And he says, "I have these emotions that come to me that may be a little guilt, but then I tell myself I'm doing a service to science." The Nazis started with this basic idea, and that is some people are more worth than others. Physical health, mental health, eventually gypsies, then of course the Jews. This idea that there's one way of living and that if life is not the way they think it has to be, then it's worthless. Again, it's an extreme example, but it just shows how far down the rabbit hole we could go when we start living in this kind of fantasy that sits there saying life is either a perfect life or it's a terrible life, and a terrible life is not worth living. Living with fear is fundamentally declaring this is not the life I signed up for. I thought I'm going to bring kids into a beautiful world. Well, sorry. We don't bring kids into the world so that they could have an easy life or a happy life. We bring kids into the world and we live our own lives so that we could have meaningful lives. And meaningful, whatever God intends for us to find meaning. If, please God, it's a nice, easy life, they'll find meaning in that. If it's a hard life, heaven forbid, they'll find meaning in that. But fundamentally, it's a life of meaning. It's not a life of comfort. And therefore, it's so frustrating when you hear people saying, all I want is my kids to be happy. Besides the fact that what in the world does that even mean? What, do they walk around with a smile all day? So do you want them to drug themselves up if that's the goal, for them to be happy? But besides, like, that's, what kind of goal is that? In other words, like, the main question is, like, really, that's the goal? Happy? If your goal was to bring a kid into the world that they should be happy, chances are they would be happy if they weren't born. As the Pirkei Avot Ethics of our father says, Noach lo shelo nivra, it's easier for a person not to be born. It's much more blissful in heaven before we're born into this world. We're not born into this world for pleasure and comfort, although that's a nice, you know, cushions, it makes life a little nicer. We're born into this world to add light, to add value, to live a life of meaning, to live a life of purpose, to partner with God to make our world better. And when things are terrible out there, then we have more value to add. And instead of cowering in fear and just hunkering down and saying, I'm terrified, I'm going to wake up, put me to sleep and wake me up when everything sorts itself out. No, we go out and better things and add value. That's what we're here for. We're here to make the world a better place. And we can only do that if we let go of fear. This is 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtson of Linksfield Shul.
This is the Fabringen with Rabbi Levi Avtson on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is 101.9 Chai FM, and here we are. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtson of Linksfield Shul, and we're here just a week before Tisha B'Av. Next Tuesday is actually going to be the fast day of Tisha B'Av, the 9th of Av. Please, God, miracles should happen and the day should turn into a day of celebration, not a day of mourning. And we're in the 9 days, which seem at first glance to be the harshest of the 9 days. At the same time, I believe it has a potential to be times of light. Sorry to get personal, but the 9 days are always a special time for me because my Hebrew birthday is in the 9 days. So I guess since the day I'm born, I've been forced to find light in this time, because otherwise my birthday is going to be pretty, as they say in the classics, umedik, pretty sad. I always joke that the way people commemorate my Hebrew birthdays by eating eggs and ashes on the day before Tisha B'Av, which is just a lovely way to have people celebrate your birthdays, dipping eggs and ashes, which is one of the customs to do just before Tisha B'Av. But I guess that my point is, I've always been forced to find light in this time. And as I saw that meme that was going around, you know, our Simchas Torah last year was destroyed, or not destroyed, but deeply hurt by the tragedy of October 7th. So if our Simchas Torah felt like a bit like a Tisha B'Av, then this year's Tisha B'Av, please God, has to turn into someone that's Simchas Torah. In other words, if our day of greatest joy was so broken, we have to make sure that our day of hurt gets uplifted. And I really believe that this year, the mandate of the 9 days is not just to mourn, there's legitimacy and a space, and there's a need for that as well, but also a time to find upliftment and a time to heal and a time to stand up against all the things in the world that are trying to put us down, right? What's the biggest win for an anti-Semite? What's the biggest win for a hater is when they demoralize you. That's the greatest win, right? Just like a bully in the playground. The biggest win for the bully is not that they stole your lunch. Fine, they stole your lunch. Sad, but that's not the win. The win is how you feel about it. How you walk home feeling like a nobody, that my lunch was stolen, or they pushed me around at the playground, or they didn't invite me to the son's bar mitzvah, and I wasn't part of the social circle, and I don't matter, right? The biggest win you could win over somebody else if you're trying to hurt them is how you make them feel of themselves. The biggest win of Iran and all its, the entire proxy of hate that exists out there, is if you and I are walking around today tense, waiting for the shoe to drop, angry, self-pity, worried. There's no room for that. I don't want to give them 1 ounce of a win. First of all, it's counterproductive for my own sanity, and it's useless. It's basically serves no utility. But more importantly, I don't want to give them a win. You're going to decide if I'm afraid or not. Some crazy radical government in Iran is going to tell me how to feel about myself and how to feel about my people and how to feel about my homeland. Really? How dare you? What do you think you are? Right? When our kids are being bullied in the playground, we often call the school right away and try to deal with the bully, and that sometimes is effective, sometimes not. But as important, if not more important, is to make sure our kid is no longer a victim by helping them build up the resilience that even if there are bullies out there, the bullies won't bully our kid. Why? Because first and foremost, I have to make sure my kid is not the victim, right? If it's in bullies or it's sexual predators, I can't heal all the world from all the problems, but I can do my best to make sure that the people I care about are not hurt by them. And that's by building their resolve and their resilience and their boundaries. Because that's why I'm talking to you from one person to another, that I really believe that this time, this day, 6th of August, 2024, while many, many people in our community are just sitting tense, waiting for the shoe to drop, I tell you, I tell me, I tell us, stop, stop, stop. That's not the way to live. Live with faith. Hinei lo yanum velo yishan shomer Yisrael. Behold, the guardian of Israel does not sleep nor slumber. He is watching over us. It will be okay. It's okay. Nobody has control over me. Nobody has a control over my emotions. Not the biggest rocket. Not the most fiery words. Hashem's with me. You know, many people read the Tehillim in times of challenge, but often we read it in the Hebrew, and we don't necessarily understand what we're saying. I would encourage you to read it in English and see King David grappling with his fears and telling himself and telling all those who would read his incredible book for thousands of years after how to never be afraid. Al Tira, don't be afraid. Ki Immanuel, God's with us. This week's Torah portion, and many times, especially in the fifth book of the Torah that we're going to be reading from now till Simchas Torah, the final book of the Torah, is those words, Al Tira, don't be afraid. And don't make other people afraid. If you can't deal with your own fear, that's your own journey. Lock yourself in a room and eat a bag of Lay's chips and a cup of ice cream if that's what you need to do. That's my coping mechanism, just sharing, public confession. But don't make other people afraid. Right? The famous expression that we read in the Parsha of Shoftim, where when the Jewish people had to wage war in biblical times, they would make an announcement just before the war started. All those who just got married went home, go home and, you know, spend time with your wife. All those who just planted a vineyard, all those who built a house. And then finally, the final message was, Ish hayare v'racha levav, whoever is afraid and of weak heart, Yelech v'yashav l'beisei, go back home. V'al yimas lev echav kilvav, don't make other people's heart fall apart. Don't melt like yours. If I can't overcome my fear, then the minimum I could do is make sure I don't pass that fear to others. One of the sicknesses we often have is that contagion, that if I'm afraid and I'm pessimistic, then I'll make sure you're afraid. I often find it with, you know, South Africa, one of my pet peeves, where people are like, Rabbi, I can't stand that you're so optimistic about the country. What do you care? What do you care? If you're negative, fine, be negative, mazel tov. Like, it's your right. But, like, it's like deep passion to make sure that I'm not the only one that's afraid. You're terrified as well, and then I've accomplished something. Really? What's your accomplishment? Yay, lucky you. You got me afraid as well. Why is that coming? On the contrary, give each other emunah, faith. Bitachon, trust. Tikva, hope. Emunah. We have to build each other up. Right? Finish off with the month of Av. We're in the month of Av, which translates as father, but also as the first two letters, Aleph Bet, which stand for Emunah and Bitachon, faith and trust. Because that's what we need in this time. So my friends, here's my sign-off message. Next week is Tisha B'Av. I don't think I'm going to be on a live show. I'll be pretty hungry. So my message for you and message for me is Al Tira, don't be afraid. Love with all your heart. Forgive. Be kind. Because in this crazy world, we need to make sure that our values are stronger than ever. And our faith. Ki Manukil, God's with us. Don't be afraid. Have a great day.